Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Schools are set to resume classroom lessons in stages starting from October 3rd. Now, by that time, it would have been 148 school days into the academic year. And out of that, students would have attended only 22 days of in-person learning. The rest were through online classes or home-based learning. However, with less than a month to go, education stakeholders are divided over the merits and the risks of reopening schools. At the heart of the debate are the trade-offs between risking unvaccinated children amid the Delta variant and the impact of on their education and well-being, as well as the economic disruption from keeping them at home. Our first guest tonight is Dr. Muhammad Ali Hassan. He's the president of the National Parent Teacher Association's Consultative Council, or PIBG. And Dr. Ali, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. Now, we understand that you are of the opinion that schools should not be reopened in October. Maybe you can begin by elaborating why this is your stand.
Well, in the first place, everyone in Malaysia wanting to strike a balance between living and livelihood, between education and health and between economics and thereon. But to start opening the school in the midst of perhaps various uncertainties, whether we can assure the school environment system is healthy, and safety and secure. Can we assure the school when they return back to school, they are in the safe condition? They will not be perhaps being affected by any of the varieties of the diseases that will incur to them. The other worry is that whether we can assure the teachers are all vaccinated, and also the pupils, those are going to come up to come back to school, facing the school lesson in front of the teachers, whether they are ready, whether their health condition ready to accept the scenario. These are things that we have to be sure. Whether the school is clean and safe, whether safety and security, whether the risks have been assured that the school will not be affected.
Ali, I want to get some more detail on that. What do you understand has been actually achieved in these many months? We know, of course, of online learning, but in terms of better ventilation in schools, in terms of social distancing, considering classroom sizes, so on and so forth, what do you understand has actually been done by the ministry in order to prepare for this moment?
Well, it's very good. The students, the teachers, and even the parents and the guardians are strongly adhering to the SOP that has been underlined for the student to follow. I appreciate that. But at the same time, this new condition, whether we can assure the student, especially teachers who have not been vaccinated, but come back to school also, but not giving pedagogy or lesson in front of the student, but doing administrative work, whether we can assure the environment to be in the safe situation, whether the SOP, the new SOP, have included this situation, whether SOP have included, whether cases, for example, the students have not been vaccinated. We know today is the starting point that the students be going to be vaccinated. But how many percentage of these students will be vaccinated by the time the school reopens?
When do you think would be a good time? When do you think schools will be ready to reopen? Are you thinking about when when, you know, a certain percentage of teachers are vaccinated, when a certain percentage of students are vaccinated, when a certain percentage of the entire school ecosystem, we're talking about people who drive school buses, who supply canteen food. Are we going to have to wait until all those people are vaccinated for us to be able to send our children back to school?
Well, these are the things that I think the health ministry have come up, have to come up with kind of guidelines, have a kind of assurance to what percentage of the vaccinated teachers, vaccinated students, vaccinated fraternity that related to education sectors that will in touch with the community, student community. I think only people, professionals that can help us are they from the health ministry. With together, of course, with the education ministry, these are the things that we need to get kind of assurance, a kind of what kind of justice. Do you want, of course, I think it's impossible. I would say it's impossible to get 100% vaccinated of the teachers, pupils, the parents, guardians.
But okay, Ali, but can I ask you this? Sorry, running out of time. Yeah, I understand. Very quick question. Should teachers be forced to have to be vaccinated? Should there be a mandatory vaccination rule for teachers?
Well, the teachers are basically civilians to workers. Civilian workers actually should adhere what kind of direction be given by the government. So if they are not going to be vaccinated, these are the things that we have to face. I mean, they have their own reason. Even if we ask, give them guidance or counseling, if they still do not want to be vaccinated, how do we face them? Can we assure them or can we make sure they do not teach the student in front of classes, but they do administrative works only? But will this not affecting the spread of diseases in the school compound?
Right. Dato' Ali, thank you so much for being on the show. That was Dato' Ali Hassan of the National Parent Teacher Association's Consultative Council. We're going to take a quick break, but we will come back with more sides to this argument. Stay tuned to Consider This. Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. We're discussing the plan for schools to stagger the resumption of classroom lessons starting October 3rd. Now, Datin Noor Azima Abdul Rahim joins us on the show now. She's the chairperson of the Parent Action Group for Education Malaysia, better known as PAGE. Datin Azima, thank you for being on the show tonight. We understand that you are for the immediate reopening of schools. Can you explain why and respond to perhaps some of the arguments raised by Quarters who say that the risk of exposing unvaccinated children amid the Delta variant is too high to risk going back to school?
Yes, thank you. Good evening, Sharad and Melissa. I think it's really up to the parent to decide based on information available to the public. And even if they decide to send their children to school, they can always change their mind, you know. So it doesn't mean that when you decide to change to send your children to school, you can decide otherwise down the road. But I think what's important is that there are several categories of students. You cannot plonk them all into one category. There are those who have been enjoying online learning and maybe even supplemented by tuition. This would be the urban kids, but then you also have the kids who have been learning offline, whatever that means, and then there's also the large portion of the children who learn via television or TV pendidikan, and that's only one way. There's no interaction, and of course you have the top of the table where the students are self-learning and probably backed by and supported by their parents, you know, who have the time and the perseverance to help them through. But I think in the end, why we are supportive of schools opening is because though there are some parents who really need to send their children to school, but there are also others who don't. So when you open schools, you have that choice for parents to decide to go to school or otherwise. So,
Azima, is there a practical problem in philosophically, I can see why choice should be central, but how does it work in terms of timetables, in terms of teachers might have only half the class in and then the other half of the class online? How would it work? Yeah.
Definitely, there has to be caution, and definitely we should start with the older kids first, because I think that the SPM kids definitely need to start school, and of course the form fours need to start, and then we'll see how it goes. Maybe for primary schools you can start the standard sixes first and the standard fives. So we are for opening schools, but with caution, of course. You cannot come October 3rd, October 4th, open the schools to everybody. There's no way that's going to
Well, has the plan to reopen schools then been clearly communicated? I mean, what do you understand the plan is? You say that it's better to have it for, say, Form 4, Form 5 children first, Standard 6 children first. But do we know anything yet about how this staggered approach is going to work?
No, I mean, from what the minister has been saying, he is implying that also plus the fact that 16 and 17 year olds are going to get vaccinated soon, you know, so as far as secondary school is concerned, and I think that it is important. You have to weigh the risk and benefits of not learning and staying at home versus going to school and having to face some risk. But if you know, it's not the first time that we are facing viruses or germs in school. You know, we've had, yeah, you go to school, you pick up germs. There's chicken pox, there's hand, foot and mouth, you know. So as far as the parents are concerned, ensure that your children have a good immune system, because it's not just COVID that God forbid that they can get infected with. There are also other diseases.
Yeah, Azima, I want to ask you this. You know, the many countries actually around the world where they didn't close schools or they didn't close school as long as we have in Malaysia. Do you think that is part of the problem? There's a kind of inertia or hesitance has come from this very long period of not having schools open.
I think it's important that kids start to go to school, because especially, you see, not all children are the same and not all schools are the same. You probably, you know, aside from the 16 and 17 year olds and the 12 year olds and 11 year olds, you know, you probably need to look at the condition the school is in, because you can probably start off under enrolled schools to open, and maybe rural schools and interior schools to start off with. You know, where classrooms are smaller, conditions are conducive, and then only slowly think about the overpopulated schools for later. So there are ways and means, and there are many, many variables, you know. So I think each school needs to decide, or each district needs to decide whether it's safe to open. And I think we should go ahead, because we are, you know, there's that learning loss which is so difficult to get back. You know, we've lost what so many months, and what are the chances of getting back that time unless we start?
Right. Well, that's precisely what we want to discuss in our next segment. But thank you so much for your insights tonight. That was Datin Nur Azimah Abdul Rahim of Page Malaysia. We're going to take another quick break, but stay tuned to consider this. Hi, thank you so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Joining us now, we have Chan Soon Singh, CEO of Teach for Malaysia. Soon Singh, good evening. Opinions are quite divided over schools reopening in October. We've heard from our first two guests and they have differing opinions. Where do you stand on this matter and why?
Yeah, good evening, Melissa and Sharad, and obviously to everybody watching as well. It's good to be here, and thanks for having me. I stand in Datin Azimah's camp on this. And, you know, Teach for Malaysia, we work with children from high-need communities. And, you know, the reality is that for so many of these children, school closures have meant zero learning for so many children. And the more that schools are closed, the larger the learning gap and the inequities in education are going to be. So there was research done on the impact of the earthquake in 2005 in Pakistan, where schools were closed for 14 weeks. And imagine this, in Malaysia, schools have been closed for 50 weeks, well, more than 50 weeks at this point. But when schools were closed for 14 weeks in Pakistan, the learning loss that resulted from that was that students were about 1.5 to 2 years behind peers where in which schools were not closed. And if you consider the impact of 50 weeks of no learning, that disadvantage that these kids have is so significant. Because of the closures. And as well, beyond learning, the learning loss, you know, schools, especially for kids from vulnerable households, schools play so much more of a role than just academic learning. There is access to food in schools. There's access to well-being services in schools. You know, kids get vaccinated in schools beyond COVID vaccinations, regular vaccinations, aspects of healthcare are serviced to kids through schools. And so schools play so much more of an important role in the development of a child overall. And the longer that they're closed, the longer a child's development is affected.
Soon Singh, you know, at least last year, we understood that several countries never closed their schools or didn't close their schools. Taiwan, Nicaragua, Sweden often come to mind when we talk about that kind of policy outlook. Do you think we were wrong to close schools, and what hasn't happened as a result of school closures? How has it disincentivized, say, for instance, creating those SOPs for a safer environment or innovation in teaching because we opted for online learning and television and so forth?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that question. I mean, in some of the countries that you mentioned, obviously their COVID situations were different. If you think of the case of Taiwan, obviously Sweden had higher cases than Taiwan and they kept their schools open, right? And so a lot of the research that is coming out shows that actually closing schools in many countries, and there was research done in Germany where closing schools actually didn't have any significant impact in helping to reduce the spread of COVID, meaning that had they kept schools open, it wouldn't have made much of a difference, right, in terms of reducing the spread of COVID. On the 9th of July, the UNICEF executive director and the UNESCO director general released a joint statement titled "Reopening Schools Cannot Wait." And in that statement, they said that schools should be the last to close and the first to reopen. You know, in the case of Malaysia, like many countries across the world, we took a very, very cautious and swift approach in locking down, right? And I think that at the beginning, being, that was the right decision to make. You know, we all did not understand the situation. We needed to gather the data. We needed to assess how to handle the situation. But the reality is that now that we've been in this pandemic for coming to, more than a year and a half already, we have that data. We have that information about how to make an informed decision around this and how to handle school, how to handle school. And I think the challenge that we've had with our school reopenings is that when we reopened schools, we kind of took it as a the plans were very much like, we're going to reopen schools eventually and they will never close again. And what we actually needed to have in place were systems in which schools would be able to really, in a really agile manner, close and reopen and respond to the cases as and when they've come. But what we also haven't been able to explore really is all the variations of which an open school could take. And so typically what's happened when kids have come back to school, you know, they've come back often in a staggered fashion, but typically we eventually bring all the students back, but we haven't explored, for example, rotational cycles. And we haven't also thought about how to cohort or to bubble groups of students so that they can more easily isolate and shut down certain aspects of school.
So there's a lot
more that we could have done.
How realistic are those proposals? I mean, Dati Nazima talked a little bit earlier about having autonomy for choice, for options, for decentralizing reopening of schools, having parents being able to choose. But how realistic are those proposals? What would it take to facilitate things like staggered school days, for instance? Do you see that being a feasible option?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Melissa. And I think that what it's going to take, you know, I believe, and I'm hoping that the guidelines that the ministry are about to release will allow for schools to be able to engage in plans that are going to make the most sense to the communities in which they're serving, right, and the health situation that they're facing locally, and you know what the plans need to take into account are that there will be varying situations, and we need to have different solutions to different situations. You know, in an ideal situation, we would be able to empower schools to make the decisions with the local health authorities. But you know, the reality is that, and you know, Malaysia has taken, and it's been important that we've taken a centralized approach in terms of managing COVID as a country. But what we need to find the balance between there, and I think that balance can be found if the Ministry of Education releases guidelines that allow schools to pick varying models dependent on certain criteria. So, for example, Dutton has
sorry to interrupt, we're running out of time. I want to ask you this. You know, the pandemic has been said very often that it's exposed real deficits in our health system. So, you know, decades of underinvestment. When we look at the Ministry of Education's response over the last year and a half, what are the serious deficits? Is there a lack of creative thinking, innovation, initiative in the Ministry of Education?
Yeah, sure. And I think that what we have so many talented teachers and school leaders all across our system. But the reality is that we have a highly centralized system. And what that has inculcated is sort of a culture across the system, which is very top down, meaning that people are afraid to take risks if they're not told or given the permission to do so. And if anything, you know, that I hope that we really invest in is, if we're really going to, not just in terms of school reopening, right, but in terms of addressing the learning loss when students come back to school, we need creative solutions to happen. We need teachers to take risks. We need to not fault teachers when they're doing their very best to make a difference for students. Now, it's obviously different if a teacher is irresponsible, right? But if a teacher is trying their best to find creative solutions, we need to not fault them for that. And that is something that has been lacking or that has been stifled. And I think that that's something we really do need to encourage, to empower our teachers. And when we empower our teachers, we're going to see more effective learning happen. We're going to see more empowered students in our schools.
Wow, wonderfully said. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. That was Chan Sun Seng of Teach for Malaysia. And that was him wrapping up this episode of Consider This. Before we leave you, a reminder that you can get the latest COVID-19 vaccine information on astroawani.com as well as the Astro Awani app. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.